Kamenetsky Brothers, Kamenetsky Brothers, Land of Lakers podcast. Brian Kamenetsky, Andy Kamenetsky, co-host of the Land of Lakers vlog. Andy, coming to you on Wednesday, May 15th. I know that used to be your job, but I took your previous advice, which was just write it down. And look how much easier that is.
No longer need Big Brother to hold your hand.
Nope, not at least in that aspect of things. Lots to cover today. We're going to open up the Facebook and Twitter mailbag. We've got some very interesting stories and a way for you to measure whether or not you might be the worst person on earth. But we're going to start, Andy, because this is where the Lakers offseason really starts, with Dwight Howard. Everything, Andy, that happens this summer is in one way, shape, or form related to the big decision that Dwight Howard has before him. Do you want to stay a Laker? Do you want to go somewhere else? And if you're Mitch Kupchak, is there any way you could speed up the decision so we know before July 1st, you know, which is after the draft and after all these other things, when maybe we could, you know, have some contingency plans.
I'm going to go out on a limb. I have not spoken to Dwight Howard since his exit interview, but I am willing to bet that the answer to that question from Mitch is no.
Yeah. I mean, he talked about it.
He's not very good at decisions that need to be made actually on time. So I'm going to go out on a limb and say he's not going to do it ahead of time.
Yeah. Basically, Kupchak laid out how it would be awfully convenient for them to know before July 1st, because all those other decisions,
certainly would
like,
be helpful if, you know, Dwight did make a decision
sooner,
for that
sooner
time,
sooner rather than later.
But, you know, we're giving him all the time that he needs. He is Dwight Howard, and, you know, we want him to come back. But it'd be nice if he did give us that, you know, a little bit of.
There's the draft. We like to have, choices and things that are done at the draft. Like, basically, are we going to trade Power or not? Like, that's basically subtext. All of this is for, are they going to trade Pau? But let's talk about this. I'll ask you the most basic question, Andy, to start. How likely do you think it is that Dwight Howard actually goes somewhere else? Because there are a few other teams out there, a few other scenarios.
Yeah, the Rockets are the team that comes up as most commonly considered the biggest threat to bring in Dwight. And I actually do think it's a legitimate chance that they have. You know, they've got theoretical room to bring him in. They've got a young core that would be appealing to play. No state tax, all that stuff. Dallas gets brought up a lot, although I don't see them as big a threat. Atlanta is, I guess, an interesting wrinkle in that they'll
Dallas not a big threat because, what is Dwight going
exactly
to?
Exactly. I don't know why he would leave this rebuilding situation to go to that rebuilding situation. It doesn't make much sense to me. If you're going to become a journeyman, at least become a journeyman for a situation that's laid out better. Atlanta's sort of interesting in that it's his hometown. They'll have a boatload of cap space, and there's always talk that they're going to make a big play to bring in Chris Paul to team him up with Dwight Howard. A little bit of pie in the sky talk about maybe the Clippers trying to do the same thing, although it would be extremely.
They'd have to find a taker for DeAndre Jordan and get basically no salary in return. That is a tall order.
Exactly. Especially, by the way, after Vinny Del Negro displayed no confidence in DeAndre Jordan. Didn't exactly make him look playoff ready.
He wasn't showcased in the playoffs in the way that you might say if you want somebody to take him. And he's got, what, like 20-something, 30-something million dollars left on that contract?
And, by the way, wasn't showcased in the playoffs for two straight seasons.
Right.
So DeAndre is going to be a difficult sell.
Doesn't scream, let's build around
right
him.
Right. You asked me maybe a month ago, I was very confident he was going to end up re-signing. At this point, I still think if I had to bet on it, I'd bet on him re-signing. But I am starting to wonder now if maybe there's a better chance, just because I wonder if at the end of the day, Dwight really wants to be here. And I wonder how much, if he doesn't want to be here or if he's not sold, he'd actually act on that instinct.
Part of the problem, I think, with the Lakers is it's, if you're Dwight, it's hard to get kind of a gauge on really what is going to happen going forward. Is Mike D'Antoni really going to be the coach for the next 3 or 4 years? Is he going to go somewhere? You know, is there a chance that he gets blown out and we have another system with another coach? Okay, if that's true, who's that coach going to be? The other giant question, and it's a major elephant in the room that I don't know if Laker fans really like talking about, is how long Kobe's going to play. Because it was sort of laying out last year before the injury that maybe next year would be his last season. So Dwight only has to be the understudy for one more year. He can kind of learn from Kobe one more time. Kobe goes off into the
Kobe likes to remind you, by the way, that you're the understudy.
Right. And
he makes it very clear who is Yoda and who is Luke Skywalker.
He will pass the torch, which is it is his. It is my torch, says Kobe, and then I will give it to you. I mean, you cannot have it until I leave, but maybe I'll go. And so, but now with the Achilles injury, even Kobe has said that that whole timeline, and you know, it all is up in the air. If he doesn't come back until, really isn't himself, I should say, I think he'll be back before this, but if he isn't himself, Andy, I think until January or February, doesn't really feel comfortable. I don't know if he's going to be willing to make that his last season. I think maybe he'll want to feel like, I got to give it one more honest run as myself. This is assuming he's capable of coming back. Maybe he isn't, but that's a whole other thing. If Kobe decides maybe he wants to play another year or two, I think that has a huge influence on whether or not Dwight would really want to stay.
It could. It absolutely could. I mean, they've had their ups and they've had their downs, but I still think it's fair to say that Dwight...
They've had their up and they've had their downs.
Yeah, I mean, I think they've had a bit of both. I think at times it's been overstated how much they really don't like playing together. But the bottom line is I don't think Dwight is 100% comfortable alongside Kobe. They, you know, their personality differences are very well documented and very real.
Oh, yeah.
But I think the biggest question mark comes from Dwight himself, because I actually think he has no idea what he wants. I think he had no idea what he really wanted when he eventually got traded over here. I think he really has no idea what he wants as the season's gone on. And I think during his exit interview, and I wish this was something he would just come out and say for all. Assuming I'm right, but I really do think I am. And I've thought it all season, and I thought it actually last year when I never really bought that he really truly wanted to leave Orlando in the first place. I think he had a lot of people whispering in his ear that he needed to leave Orlando, or people that wanted.
Do you think that's true, literally? Like, people literally come up and whisper in his ear, Dwight, you should really try to get yourself to Brooklyn.
They probably do that more while he's sleeping,
and then somebody else like moves away, and somebody else, Dwight, I think you should try to stay in Orlando.
You know what?
Because it's not easy. It's not easy for normal people to whisper in Dwight Howard's ear.
Well, you got to do it while he's sitting.
At
a table.
Right.
On a couch.
You have to find ways to say, oh, I'm just changing this light bulb here, Dwight. Dwight, I think you should stay.
But at the same time, though, you have to whisper, because depending on who's around and who overhears it, it becomes problematic.
Right. People use that expression.
They have to at least do it in their Soto voice. But I mean, I never really bought that Dwight felt in his heart that he had to leave, that this was something he wanted to do. And then once the decision wasn't Brooklyn, which, again, I'm not even 100% sure he really felt he had to go to New York, that he had to be in a bigger market. I think that the problem Dwight has had the last couple years is that he really does not know what he wants, and he's bad at making decisions, and that's what makes all of this a wild card forward.
I think he knows what he's supposed to want.
Yeah,
he's supposed to want to be on a championship franchise, and I don't doubt that when Dwight says I want to be on a winning team and I want to win titles, and I don't know if he entirely knows what that means, but I think you could say that about most players who haven't won a title. I think, you know, LeBron, until he actually got to the point where he had a couple finals failures and all that, didn't entirely understand what goes into winning a title. So to kill Dwight for that, I don't think is fair. But I think when you talk about the market, well, I'm supposed to go be in a big market. I'm supposed to go play this, and I'm supposed to be the guy around, you know, where I get 20 post touches of this and be, quote unquote, the man in that way. I think that kind of plays into why he hates the concept of being a pick and roll center, because there's this construct of what he's supposed to be taken seriously as an all-time great, which I also think he wants to be. He wants to be seen as somebody who is one of the sort of transformative figures in the NBA. But how you get to that point is very difficult to figure out, and it's only made harder, I think, by the way that media and fans and stuff operate now as compared to even 5 or 6 or 7 years ago, where you know, the criticism and these voices that Dwight has admittedly said he has never done a good job voicing out are constant. They are very loud and they are everywhere. So ignoring that stuff, if you're somebody like Dwight, like you say, who has trouble making decisions, it's really hard.
Right. And that's why
I am a little bit sympathetic for him in that regard. I mean, is it better to stay here? Is it better to go to Houston where he'd have to share with Harden? I mean, probably if he wants to win quickly, Houston's a better place than LA.
Either way, that's the reason why as time has gone on since that exit interview, or even like, you know, since April started, when I really felt like, you know what, he's gonna resign. And I always felt that. I still think he will when it's all said and done, if I had to put money on it. But I do think that element of Dwight truly not knowing what he wants makes the whole thing a crapshoot to some degree.
Okay, so the next question, the logical extension of that question, because the assumption is that no priority for the Lakers is higher than signing Dwight Howard. Do you agree with that? I mean, because I will say, I think they have to sign him. I think they have to in almost basically any situation. You have to try to re-sign Dwight Howard. Would you agree? Do you think he's in the fundamentally that question is, do you think he's somebody you can build a championship team around?
I'm not sure. I'm actually really not sure. You had asked before, was there any reason I wouldn't sign him? If I felt like Dwight wanted to be a Laker, like he really decided, you know what, this is what I want, and I want everything that comes
today,
along with it.
I mean, yeah. for whatever it's worth that Dwight says, this is what I want.
Well, I mean, you get the indication that he's felt that way for a few weeks. That, you know, what
for a few weeks?
Well, a few weeks since the season ended until now.
That's funny because we're talking about Dwight. The best that we can do about commitment and all these other things, like you compare that to like San Antonio, where guys like Duncan and Parker and this and that would sooner throw themselves in front of a bus than go somewhere
else. That's fine,
but
I mean, in fairness to Dwight, I mean, and this is something that I think people overlook a lot because, you know, how could you not want to be a part of the Lakers and the tradition that's going on here, and it's the winningest franchise in the history of the NBA. You know, it's been the most successful for as long as it has, and the prestige in the city. What type of decision is there even to make on Dwight's part? Kobe was going to leave the Lakers after being there 7 more years than Dwight had been there,
right.
Won 3 titles, 4 trips to the finals, way more stability, and knew that they were building around him and had a track record of doing it, and he still was going to leave.
And by the way, one of the places, you know, I guess there are a couple times in theory where he might have gone, you know, twice, but the first time, one of the places he was talking about going, the Clippers.
Exactly.
So, I mean, you're going to go from the Lakers to the Clippers.
In fairness to Dwight, I mean, I don't think it's entirely, and media does this, especially locally, and fans do this to Dwight a lot, and I actually don't think it's fair. The idea of, how is this even a decision to make? It's not a decision.
And what the Lakers did with Showtime is really not germane. And whether or not Kareem Abdul-Jabbar played for the Lakers, which he did, I looked it up, isn't really germane to Dwight's decision, because it doesn't really, how good are they going to be going forward? Am I going to be happy here going forward? You know, all of those things are things that fans want him to do because it makes it more likely that he signs.
But would I have any reservations though? I mean, if I felt he wanted to be here, absolutely. You lock him up. I think he's going to be healthier next season.
But if your 3 weeks go by and he says, I want to be here.
Well, I mean, he's only had a few weeks.
I'm just picking up because it's such a way to frame it that is very Dwight specific.
But if I felt like, say, he was staying, Brian, because he felt like either this is what he has to do. You know, he's got people around him saying you have to stay here, or he's feeling external pressure that you can't leave this team, or he's worried that it does make him look like a journeyman during the prime of his career to play for three different teams in 3 years, which is a bad look for a guy like Dwight.
No question.
If I felt like that was the reason, that was the primary force driving him to say, I'll sign, basically I have to, versus whether I actually want to, I'd probably still bring him in, but I'm not going to lie. I would lose a little sleep over it. It would feel like a big decision because, I know if he doesn't work out, you could try to move him or anything like that. But it still, though, speaks to the franchise moving forward, that this is the first guy that you really turn the keys over to, and you find out within a year,
maybe he doesn't want to be there.
Right. He doesn't want to be there.
I feel like he's too good. In this league,
I understand.
You have to. I mean, he is. And we saw glimpses of it. I mean, you look at his stats, and I don't literally have him in front of me, and that's probably a mistake. But you know, you go into March and April, and he still wasn't fully healthy. And you look at what he did.
Well, his
numbers were big, and
led the league in rebounding, coming off back surgery.
Right, and so he's a top five guy. If he comes back healthy next year, and he'll have a full summer to truly rehab and get in shape, and say what you want about Dwight Howard, the guy is dedicated to his body. whether it's due to narcissism or anything else, or
a kidding. Desire. If I looked like that, I'd keep it up.
I wouldn't own shirts if I looked like that. But if whether it's because he's narcissistic or because he really truly has the desire to be a champion, doesn't really matter. The point is he's dedicated to his body and is going to come back and be in great shape next year, assuming his body lets him. And if that's the case, he's a top five guy in the league. He might be a top three guy in the league. I just don't. You can't let that go.
I
understand your reservations. I would sign him no matter what. But I understand your reservations.
Like I said, in the end, I'd probably still do it. But I wouldn't feel as good about it as you would think a guy who just locked up Dwight Howard would feel.
Right. And look, he's always going to have certain efficiencies that he's tough to give the ball to in the fourth quarter. You're going to have to put him next to a perimeter guy who can take some of that pressure away. You know, somebody else who can make a shot on the outside and all that kind of stuff. But Dwight Howard is really good, and he is a guy with a track record of transforming teams on defense, and he's a monster on the glass, and he's not perfect, and he smiles too much, and he's not Kobe, but he's really, really flipping good, and there aren't a lot of guys out there who are better. I think you have to re-sign him.
What if he doesn't stay, though? What if he's not going to stick around? What if he decides this isn't for him?
It's not the end of the world.
It really isn't the end of the world. It's a dirty little secret about this whole Dwight Howard saga.
It would be a blow to the team's short-term plans.
Sure.
And a real blow to their self-esteem, to this sort of the invincibility of the Lakers as a concept that nobody ever leaves the team, that why wouldn't you stay here? We have the titles. They spend money. They do all these other things. It is the premier free agent destination. Why wouldn't somebody want to sign with the Lakers? And then Dwight Howard turns around and wants to go sign somewhere else. They'd get a little bit of it would be mitigated a little bit by the fact that it's Dwight Howard.
I was just going to say that if it were anybody else, right, it would be a major blow.
But
that it's Dwight, that it's Dwight, there's probably going to be more people saying the problem is him, not the Lakers.
I think that may be true, but I think a lot of people will see
it. It's a setback.
In the new world that we live in, I don't think the stuff that you're talking about with the Lakers is as important as it once was. And Dwight leaving would kind of reinforce that. But like you said, it's
a setback, but it's not a disaster.
It doesn't have to be.
What would be a disaster, though, would be if he said, I don't want to stay, and is willing to participate in a trade, and the Lakers panic and decide, okay, we have to get something for Dwight. We can't be left empty-handed, and they bring in a bunch of players and contracts that they don't really want, that go past 2014, that mess up the flexibility they have moving forward to build a team that they actually want. That's a disaster. That's an absolute disaster.
You can't decide. Basically what it comes down to in this league, as much as anything, is you can't be mediocre. You have to either be really good or decide, or say, you know what, we're going to have to be bad. We're going to have to be a low-level team for a couple years and either get lottery picks that get us, and the Lakers are a little bit stuck here because they don't have a lot of their picks going forward, but they do have theirs next year. Either we're going to acquire assets from being bad, where we sign young players or we draft them and we do it that way, or which we can then use like Houston did to acquire Harden or something like that, or we're going to be really good. When you're in the middle, you're dead.
Yep.
And the Lakers, if Dwight goes somewhere else, they could decide we're either going to just play the season without Dwight and pay X amount of dollars less and see what happens, and nothing changes going forward. Or we're just going to start blowing it up a year early.
Sure.
Maybe we amnesty Powell and let him go and start really clearing.
Amnesty Kobe if he requests it.
Amnesty Powell going forward. Or you trade Powell for an expiring deal and a draft pick, something that you know is not going to make your team better next year. Something that, you know,
but could
whatever.
Make it better moving forward.
Forward. And you amnesty Meta, and you get yourself under the tax line a year early, which lets you going into the, you know, maybe you sign a better mid-level player, and then you can get more flexibility and all these other things. But it would require the people who cheer for the team to understand that Kobe Bryant's potentially final year might just be a farewell tour. It would require the Lakers organization to withstand the pressure that would come with the public pressure to try to put something around Kobe for his potential last season and all this other stuff. Because just this concept has taken hold. The Lakers never reload. They only rebuild. They only reload. The Lakers would have to resist it. They'd have to, because I don't see how Dwight could leave and the Lakers could replace Dwight with something that would make them a contender this year without screwing up what comes forward. It's impossible.
But the good thing is, though, we've seen evidence of them being willing to withstand that pressure. You know, during that period where Kobe grew unhappy and eventually did request to leave, there were trades that they could have made and didn't make because they knew it wouldn't make them immediately better, or there were contracts they didn't want to take on. And they believed in what they had, and it turned out they were actually right. And it was a few years, I know, of hell, you know, which by most franchise standards,
three seasons of hell for Kobe,
right? Exactly, and for fans. But the truth is, they didn't just look to reload right away. They did a rebuilding job of sorts, and it worked. And the other thing too, if it had to be this way, Kobe could figure out a way to make a farewell tour work. Kobe could figure out a way to make a farewell tour work.
It would suck. It would suck for Kobe.
It's not the way it should go out.
But sports doesn't work this way. You don't get to organize stuff in the best possible way around one person. Kobe has done extraordinary things for the Lakers. The Lakers have done extraordinary things for Kobe. It would be great if they could figure out a way to give him a real shot to win a title in what could be his last season or his last two seasons. It may not work this way, but I have to say the one other thing about this let's say they sign and trade Dwight to Houston. And like I said, I still think he stays, but if he doesn't, there's a good chance he goes. Houston's the most logical place. You get a couple picks back, a couple young players or something. You get some assets back from Houston. You trade Powell to someone, you get a draft pick, an expiring contract or whatever. The process to rebuilding, you have all that cap space in 2014. It gets exciting, but in some ways, I think it could be kind of exciting. It could inject something into the Lakers, kind of the community that hasn't been there for a few years, which is fun and expectation and anticipation of what might come, as opposed to this. It hasn't been fun. Like when you're expected to win in this town, and everything that comes is not fun. Either you're winning and you're a title champion, or you get there at the end, or it's just this horrible disappointment.
Particularly when the face of the organization is Kobe Bryant, right, who, you know, is an incredible player, but he doesn't reek of fun.
No. And like there's something that is neat about watching a team get built, about getting young lottery type players in and bringing in draft picks and building something from the ground up, where you get your next Paul George, or you draft somebody like Harden, and you watch.
Or that. What happened with Andrew Bynum?
What happened with Bynum? And because remember, the Lakers were in first place in the Western Conference at the time of the Gasol trade, and so they were on that upward trajectory, and that was an exciting time for the Lakers. Then they get Gasol, and it's like, well, where can we go from here? And then they get to the finals. That finals run was more fun than probably any of the ones that came before, because fans didn't have the expectation that they had to get there.
Or too, just
it
like,
was so much more interesting.
The moments too, like within those runs of seeing Trevor Ariza, you know, who had bounced around the league, emerge as a guy that can be a key part of winning a title, or Shannon Brown, who was a throw-in in the Vlad Radmanovic deal, get his moments during the 09 run, even having been there only a month or so out of nowhere. You know, those type of things are fun as well. Sort of that little play within the play.
Right. It's at the very least, it takes away the things like Mike Brown's, I would say, final season. It technically wasn't. It was really his only season where we all had to sit around and pretend like the Lakers were a team with real championship aspirations when we all knew they weren't going to win anything. But we still that was the direction we had to go from, because there wasn't any of like Golden State Warriors type. Let's see how far we can go. Let's build to something. So I would find that at least a little bit refreshing.
You know what? As a Laker fan, actually, I think I could end up. If you're going to be bad, you at least want to be bad with purpose and with something where you can see a vision involved with being bad. And, you know, the way the Thunder were bad 3 or 4 years ago, you could absolutely see where they were going. And that must have been really exciting for those people in Oklahoma City.
Finally, before we go, Andy, a couple stories that I think are
that's
are
right, by the way, too, for people who've never seen it, fake Coach Pop, his Twitter press conferences. Follow them on Twitter.
Yeah, you have
to. Awesome. Fake Coach Pop.
I've got one for you. You've got one for me. Let's start with this one. Apparently at Disney World, I should say, is where this story is coming. Disney World is investigating, this according to Yahoo, a news that a handful of, quote, upper crust Manhattan moms have a pricey secret way to get their kids to the front of the line at Disneyland. And it's by hiring a handicapped person to be their guide, or And this is probably worse.
Hard to believe you can go worse.
Having one of their children appear handicapped for the purposes of getting to the front of the line.
It's George Costanza in that episode of Seinfeld when he faked being handicapped.
Right, so to get keep a parking. Right. And no, it was to keep the job.
To keep the job at PlayNow.
How bad... I have two questions. How long would a line have to be before you would have your little daughter pretend to be handicapped so you could get in faster? An hour? 2 hours? 3 hours? Because surely there's a point here where you would do that. 4 hours?
If I'm going to do something so awful, I want to make sure it works. And you cannot do this with a two-year-old because they won't sit still long enough.
That's true. And you she may not be a very good actor.
Yeah, she's not going to be a good actor. She's not going to understand what's going on. I can't lay out a game plan with a two-year-old. Right. So the reality is for me, it's just how long would I wait in line before scheming with maybe a seven-year-old?
So you're
maybe one who would spend a little bit of time at like the actor's studio. Right. You know, if
or
say
you're going
I was,
to find one of the real McCoys.
Well, I was going to say I was Dakota Fanning's father. I could go over this with an accomplished young actress. No, maybe 8 hours. No, the truth is I would get out of line. I don't like rides enough that I would even want to make myself feel so awful about myself just to get on a ride. I don't like rides enough. It's not worth it to me to feel like I need to take a 6-day shower.
Well, and setting aside reports that Andrew Bynum had parked his car at the front of It's a Small World. It's too easy. I just couldn't pass that up. I mean, this on a scale of 1 to 10, this makes you about a 9 on the horrible person scale. If you're so rich that you want to hire a handicapped person because you can't wait in line with your children, you're a terrible person.
Actually, no, you're not. And I'll tell you why. All we've heard from the GOP and the right is that the 1%, they're job creators. And it is that the reason we can't raise taxes is because that puts pressure on small businesses and the job creators out there. These wealthy people are creating jobs.
So what you're worried about is if taxes go up, rich people will not be able
I'm
to
just
hire
saying, the
handicapped
way you can
people
spin
to be in
this,
their line.
If you want, is at least they are creating a job for that handicapped person. They're horrible people, Brian. They're awful.
This is a 9.
People.
This is a 9 on a scale of 1 to 10.
That is a 9 rounding down. These are very, very bad people. Although I will say, if you're going to do that, at least be a job creator.
It's clever. But it's very, very bad.
Goose the economy.
Very,
somehow.
Very bad.
The story I got for you, Brian, comes out of Bullitt County, Kentucky.
Mm-hmm.
Of course. A man was arrested after spending the night in a Mount Washington grocery store, according to police. The manager opened a Value Mart and found 57, basically, Whippets, the Ready Whip whipped cream cans found in the garage in the garbage Monday. And then it turns out, according to surveillance video, this man, Trevor Runyon, had gone into the store just before it closed and hid from the employees. After it closed, the lights went out. Video showed Runyon drank some beer, smoked some cigarettes, cooked and ate 6 steaks, some shrimp, and a birthday cake. Not surprisingly, he also allegedly soiled himself and got clothes found in this store that apparently sells everything to change into. Afterwards, he climbed into the rafters and went to sleep. Firefighters were called to bring Runyon down. He was taken into custody by the police. It's quite a full night.
It is. That's a lot to pack in. Well, the grocery store closes at 11. It opens up at 7. I mean, you're busy.
I'm going to give Trevor Runyon this much. If you're going to do this, go hard.
I mean, 6 steaks, maybe you cooked them all at the same time, but that's still, you know, that's an hour. You know, the birthday cake takes a long time.
Shrimp,
to eat
I don't
entire...
know if they were cooked or raw.
Right,
but
I mean, it takes a long time to eat
but
a whole
But just he got
cake.
His money's worth. He went hard. If you were to sneak into a store or a business after hours, spend the night there, go to town,
I have to
what
say,
would it be?
Gourmet food store would be really high on my list. You know, a place like that, assuming they had the facilities there to be able to cook stuff too, that would be really high on my list. Just eat everything. The place that I would really love to do it, I've actually done to some degree. When I would want to go into a stadium after it's closed and just run around, like run the bases and play football and do all that stuff in like a real place after it's
by
closed.
By yourself?
Well, can I bring friends?
How many? Because then it gets tougher to sneak in.
That's true. Eight. I need eight people to make this work.
So you're going to have to stagger the sneak in.
Yeah, or we'll just get a really good hiding spot. I mean, the stadiums are big. But when I was in high school, I did this. I was in a spring training facility, and friends, we actually went into the field where the then Florida Marlins played and ran around the bases and slid and did all that stuff. It was like Bull Durham because the sprinklers were on, and that was a lot of fun.
That does sound.
I would do that first, and if that didn't work, then I would probably pick, like my man Trevor Runyon, a gourmet food store. Because, again, you're by yourself.
I would go very, very high-end sushi restaurant. Because they typically contain three of my favorite things, and lots of it. Sushi, which makes sense. Beer, and whiskey. That's a good night for me. Free sushi, all I can eat. Free beer and whiskey, all I can drink. And, you know, they usually have, like, a good TV.
Yeah, but you don't... Can you roll your own sushi?
I can figure it out. I got, like, seven, yeah, 8 hours to figure it out. Well, I would also...
If it doesn't look as pretty, you can still just pile all the stuff into a bowl. Oh, all right. Lots more to talk about as the summer goes on. Plenty more with Dwight. Some questions about free agents and roster building and all that stuff soon to come over the course of the summer. But right now, Andy, I have an important question to ask you.
Sure.
Anything else?
Nope.
All right. See everybody next time.
See ya.